Good morning, committee and visitors and friends. This is June 11th. Surely it must be a great day. Well, it's a great day for Representative Taylor. Her son's graduating today, so she's at a graduation. What better way to start an education meeting? But this is the Joint Committee on the Education Subcommittee. And barring any other urgent business, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3380 and Senate Bill 213. And Governor Brown, if you want to join us at the table, and Doug, if you give us a brief description of the bills that we're hearing. And you can bring along anybody you want. Oh, you're fine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You have a public hearing underway for House Bill 3380, which relates to a new preschool mixed delivery program. There is funding. The level probably isn't quite set in concrete. That will be in the Department of Education's budget, the Early Learning Division, and also Senate Bill 213, which deals with the early learning hubs. There's a couple of things in this bill, one dealing with metrics and measurement, and the other taking the demonstration status off the hubs and making them a permanent fixture.
Okay.
So that's a brief introduction.
Thanks, Doug. Mr. Co-Chair, do you want to welcome our speaker?
Thank you very much. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome my longtime friend, Kate Brown, the governor of the state of Oregon. I have known Katie since...
Give out her age.
No, I won't give out her age. She was very young,
mind.
And I was middle-aged. And I first met her in 1991 when my wife and I helped her get into the legislature the first time, and we've been friends ever since. And my job here is to help this governor be the most successful education governor in the history of the state of Oregon.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. With that, I need to give no introduction. Governor Brown, if you'd love to share with us your thoughts on these two bills.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, and members of the subcommittee. For the record, Kate Brown currently serving as Oregon's governor, and I do have the certified smart people behind me, so they're prepared to answer all of your difficult questions. But I do feel like I am a bit preaching to the choir here as I testify in support of both of these bills. As Oregonians, we share a fundamental responsibility to ensure every student has access to the highest quality education from cradle to career. Through my work early on as a family law advocate and as a legislator, I know there's much more that we can do as a state to make sure that every Oregon child is ready to learn when he or she starts kindergarten and reading proficiently by third grade. That's why I have prioritized investment in early learning programs for Oregon's youngest learners ages 0 to 5. We must close opportunity gaps for every student before they begin. Supporting the stability and health of families beginning prenatally at birth and providing access to high-quality, affordable childcare and preschool is critical to ensure all Oregon children thrive. Unfortunately, these critical services and early learning opportunities still only reach a fraction of the children and families who need them. Two bills before you today, House Bill 3380 and Senate Bill 213, lay the groundwork for a better approach. 3380 expands access to affordable, high-quality childcare and preschool to more Oregon children. Senate Bill 213 fosters cross-sector partnerships through regional early learning hubs that coordinate and expand the delivery of critical wraparound services to underserved children and their families. Both bills are critical to creating a more integrated and effective early learning system that delivers desired outcomes, especially for our underserved students. On Tuesday, I had the great opportunity to join 3 to 5-year-olds at Wilbur Community Action Head Start, not far from where we sit at the Capitol. I joined in these with these bright children who were read stories and sang together during their afternoon circle time. And I visited with a few of the working parents who find hope and the opportunity early learning environments provide, like Wilbur Head Start, for their children and to themselves as parents. One mom, she was not a planned parent for me to speak to, but she was there, and she explained to me that she was working full-time and that her husband is attending Chemetica Community College on a full-time basis studying mechanics. They couldn't afford full-time daycare or preschool, so Wilbur is definitely a blessing for their family. She is also notices significant differences in her daughter's readiness for kindergarten. Her daughter knows her numbers, her letters, her colors, and can spell simple words. So she feels that her daughter is very prepared to start kindergarten in the fall. Wilbur Head Start is not unique in demonstrating results with the students they serve. What is noteworthy is that it is the only full-day, full-year Head Start preschool within the network of Community Action Head Start facilities all across Marion and Polk counties. Only a fraction of the region's families are able to take advantage of these critical services. The waiting list at Wilbur Head Start has 17 families on it. The mixed delivery model in House Bill 3380 would raise eligibility to 200% of the poverty level, which for a family of four is a roughly $48,500 a year. More of our children would get the education they need. This mixed delivery model would also elevate early learning programs that already exist. In addition to expanding availability at Head Start and Oregon Pre-K, the state would support current child care providers, school districts, and community-based organizations to offer the same level of preschool quality through their own preschool programs. Along expanded Head Start and preschool options, Senate Bill 213 permanently established early learning hubs to play a crucial role in coordinating providers and services to reach underserved children. The hubs provide a critical leverage point for coordinating community assets to meet the needs of families throughout our state. I think we have an opportunity this legislative session to build upon our investment in early learning in Oregon and create a very strong foundation for young children and their families. Investing early will have a positive ripple effect on our education system, our social service sector, our economy, and Oregon's future. Moreover, it's the right thing to do. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your support of both of these bills. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Representative Huffman.
The guy with his hand always up, right?
Yes, yeah. the Johnny go get him.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
I got the cutest picture last night from one of my daughters and one of my youngest granddaughters graduated from kindergarten yesterday in a cap and gown from Perrydale. Cutest thing. We talked.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Huffman, it's good to know you're old enough to be a grandparent.
Oh, so. My 17 of them, but yes.
17?
I'm well old enough. Yes.
You have 17 grandchildren?
And one more due any day. So.
Holy smokes.
We talked a couple of months ago about, you know, passions for early learning, and I'm just curious, 2 months later, and well down the road in the legislative process, I hope this is a fair question, if you don't mind answering. As you've been following our policy work and the budget, are you concerned? Do you see any holes anywhere as we continue to transition from the commission system over to the hub and a variety of other changes? Do you see holes that we need to be concerned about?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Huffman, I guess how I would respond to that question is that we need adequate resources and they need to be sustained over the long term. And so I think it's critically important that we adequately fund both of these bills. So I think one of the challenges for Oregon has been, and this has been my experience, you might all recall, well, not very many of you actually, I believe it was the 99 legislative session we had legislation, Senate Bill 555, we called it the triple nickel, and it was the Oregon Children's Plan. And the goal was to essentially fund our early investments in early childhood education. And we did that legislative session, and then in the 2001-03 legislative session, we had five special sessions and severe budget cuts. And so I think the challenge for us is to sustain these types of funding levels over the long term if we want to build a very integrated and positive system that will serve all of our families. So I think this is sort of a long-term game, and I think it's a commitment that we all need to make to not just do it this session, but to make sure that we continue doing it moving forward.
Thank you.
Thank you. Co-Chair Monroe.
Yeah. Katie, I spent a decade on the Mount Hood Community College Board, helped get the money to build the finest child care center, Head Start Center, in existence. If you haven't been out there, be sure and do it. It's really wonderful. My wife, who you know, who spent 20 years as a preschool director, said she'd have died to work in a place like that. But we also instituted a program at Mount Hood to train Head Start and preschool teachers. The problem is they get paid really poorly, a little better than minimum wage. And so if we're going to really have Head Start preschool, quality preschool for every child in Oregon, we're going to have to deal with the issue of a living wage. Can you comment?
Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, I totally and completely agree. I think there are two challenges in terms of our education workforce. Obviously, the pay level is one of them, making sure that we pay what I would consider professional wages at every level of the scale. And the other piece is making sure we have a diverse group of educators that reflects what I call the growing changes in the faces of Oregon. So I think those are the two challenges. I know there's folks behind me that can speak more specifically about pay scales in terms of early childhood education, but I would certainly agree minimum wage is not good enough if they're teaching our very youngest children. And we all know, I think Eleanor Roosevelt knew this, we're seeing the data very clearly now. The 0 to 5 in terms of brain development is obviously the most critical, and so we want to attract the best and the brightest educators, not only for that level, but our entire teaching spectrum. But the early childhood brain is really key, and so our early childhood programs are key. So,
can you follow up?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
I've given many speeches where I've said it says something about our society that the people that take care of our small children and the people that take care of our old senior citizens in nursing homes are the lowest paid workers, and that troubles me.
Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, yes.
Yes. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Yeah, good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
This is my first session on this committee, and I've learned a lot. Coming into the session, the previous governor dedicated about, in his budget, he had about $240 million for us to look at and distribute for early childhood learning, third grade reading, STEM, all kind of different programs. And then at the beginning, when he left, that concept kind of left. And so we get, I don't know what the number is, but we have like 60 million. I've heard maybe a little bit more now, maybe 80. I'm not privy to all those numbers, but
yeah.
It's way less than half of what we got to deal with in order to fund those different programs. So I hope in the future, and I know you really support this stuff, but I also really believe the third grade reading levels are important and all those programs are important. So like you said, we just need more dollars to do that. So I hope you support that in the future.
Representative Comp, Senator Thompson, mm-hmm. Yes. We have focused this legislative session on early childhood 0 to 5, making sure that children are ready for kindergarten. I think the next step building on is to make sure that children are reading by third grade. We just took an incremental approach. And having served and worked in this building for over 20 years, I'm well aware that we don't always get everything we want the first session. So my goal is to continue to build the system. And we haven't forgotten about career and technical education. That's also on my my radar screen as well. We're certainly working on that. So.
Thank you, Senator. And Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator, please keep your comments very about Coos Bay to a minimum this morning.
I wasn't even going to bring that up, but now that you've mentioned it, I do appreciate you having your staff always have a picture of the lighthouse from our area when they present the budget. I wasn't going to mention that, but it was kind of her to put that in. I just want to say I appreciate your engagement in education issues from preschool to higher ed and allowing Lindsay to be at so many meetings and spending so much time with us. It is truly appreciated, and it also allows us to feel that we are working as a team to get these things done, as our co-chair Monroe had said. And I really believe it has been a really effective team, and I appreciate the work and time you have put into this along with Lindsay. So thank you.
Representative Kopp, Senator Roblin, I think it's critically important, and I'm glad that Lindsay's willing to spend as much time with you all as that he has been. So thank you.
Any other comments? Well, and Governor, since your back is to the audience, I don't know if you'd like to turn around and see some of our arrivals that came while you were speaking. But and I don't know if they're testifying, but I know they'd love to say hello.
I will do that.
Okay, and thank you for coming. And
thank you very much for having me, and thanks for everybody on this committee for your good work. I really appreciate the time and energy that you all spend. So have a great morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Megan, if you'll come up and share with the content of these bills, and I know that all of us have been working very hard, in particular our LFO staff and our co-chairs were with the presiding officers, and I personally believe we have a good, robust budget coming to this committee and to our body. And so if with that lead in, please share us what we're all going to outcomes we're going to try to achieve here.
Thank you. Co-chairs Comp and Monroe, members of the committee, great to be back in front of you again this morning. For the record, my name is Megan Irwin, and I'm the acting early learning system director. And I'm really excited to be here today to talk to you about House Bill 3380 and Senate Bill 213. I think I'll take 3380 first and then 213 for y'all. So House Bill 3380 will create a mixed delivery preschool model for the state in the state of Oregon for the first time. And I want to make sure to say, and I think you've probably heard me say this before, that this bill is more than just a new great idea. This is something that we know works. High quality preschool programs can cut the achievement gap and put children on a trajectory for reading proficiently at third grade. And that's really, when we're talking about high quality preschool, the outcome that we're striving for. Think about an investment in high quality preschool as an investment in the state's third grade reading goals. Preschool programs are also proven to build social, emotional, and self-regulatory skills that help children succeed in school and later in life. And I had the chance to join the governor on her visit to the preschool earlier this week and got to see this in action. I got to talk to two four-year-old sisters who could write their names perfectly and legibly. They wouldn't tell me their names. They wrote them down, which meant I had to actually be able to read their handwriting to know their names, and I could. I was really impressed. And I was also very impressed at the social skills and the self-regulatory skills of the kids in this program. When it was time to clean up and go to circle time so that they could meet the governor, they cleaned up their room in like 5 minutes. These are 4 and 5 year olds. I was really impressed with the skills that they've clearly learned in preschool. And aside from that, long-term studies that have tracked underserved children who attend preschool have shown that they are more likely to avoid contact with the criminal justice system. And so as you consider this bill, keep in mind that our cost per child in this model is about $8,500 per child. And by contrast, 1 year in the Oregon Youth Authority costs the state about $79,000 per year. If passed, this bill will make preschool available for approximately 1,500 more eligible children, bringing the total number of children served by state-funded preschool in Oregon up to 8,790. And so that in and of itself is something that I think we could be really excited about. That's more children in high-quality environments, more children ready for school, more children with their social and emotional needs met, and more children on track for third-grade reading and success later in life. But on top of that, which is would be in and of itself a fantastic outcome, this bill is a critical investment in our state's efforts to build a child and family-centered learning system. The mixed delivery preschool bill expands eligibility for this state-funded preschool program from 100% of the federal poverty level to 200% of the federal poverty level, so it's a wonderful investment in low-income working families. It builds on our state's community capacity by allowing us to fund preschool slots in a variety of settings for the first time. So we would be able to fund preschool slots in high-quality child care, community-based child care. It could be a child care center or a family child care home that meets our quality standards. In elementary schools, in existing Oregon pre-kindergarten programs, and in community-based programs. And I will say there is a huge pent-up demand for this in our state. You probably all have superintendents in your districts who are starting preschools in the case of school districts like David Douglas and Pendleton, or who really want to be able to start preschools. And so this would be kind of a down payment on that desire. In addition to that, some of the policy components of this bill really push us to more strongly support our workforce, to the point that Senator Monroe made earlier. There are components of this bill that get at training and supports for the professional workforce that's caring for our children, and it also calls on the Early Learning Council to establish a salary schedule for preschool teachers in our state. We did earlier in the legislative session, I think about a month ago, go into a little bit more extensive detail on this bill. You've heard a lot from me about it. So I'll end my portion on House Bill 3380 by just saying I really hope that you'll join Governor Brown, the Early Learning Council, me, the Head Start Association, the Children's Institute, and other early learning advocates and parents across the state in supporting this bill.
Thank you. Unless there's some urgent question at this time, Megan, can I just ask a big favor and ask if you will hold your testimony? You're going to testify on Senate Bill 213 also?
Yes, I have a brief introduction for you on it.
Okay. How brief?
Very brief, but I'm happy to have the members of the public who are here to talk to you about preschool testify.
Yeah, and Senator Representative Greenlick's here also in the room to testify. So if you want to give your brief overview of Senate Bill 213, and then we will go from there.
Okay. So on Senate Bill 213, thank you, Representative Comp. On Senate Bill 213, I'm going to be very brief because we did a whole day on early learning hubs earlier this session about a month ago. So Senate Bill 213 establishes early learning hubs as permanent by amending a previous statute to remove the label demonstration project. You've heard a lot of testimony on the hubs. You know they were created to make resources and supports more available and accessible for children and families. by incenting and working toward that cross-sector collaboration and building a system out of what we've talked a lot about has traditionally been a patchwork of programs and services. So the bill in front of you today, Senate Bill 213, does a couple of very simple things to keep the hub system moving forward. It removes the demonstration project language from the original statute. It requires the Early Learning Division to provide an annual report to the legislature on the progress of hubs every December during legislative days. And it requires the Early Learning Division to conduct an external evaluation of the success of early learning hubs and then to present that information to the legislature in the 2019 legislative session. And when we present that report, the legislature will have the opportunity to consider what's working, what isn't working, and make necessary changes. And we felt like that time horizon was appropriate to let the system settle into itself and start to get results. And we thought that adding that to the bill created a really important piece of accountability between the division and the hubs to this body. So I've really appreciated the chance to share so much with this subcommittee about the early learning hubs over the course of this legislative session. This bill is particularly important for moving the system building part of our work forward and establishing a really high level of accountability for that work. So I hope, again, that you'll join Governor Brown, the Early Learning Council, myself, and the hundreds of Oregonians who are now working as part of their local Early Learning Hub and supporting House Bill 213. And I need to tell you, Senator Roblin, Representative Huffman, we just approved the contracts for both for the hubs in your two regions. So we have 16 fully approved hubs. And the folks in your regions have done a fabulous job getting their hubs up and off the ground.
Super.
And that ends my testimony for the day.
Thank you, Megan. We really appreciate it. Senator Roblin, did you want to make a comment at this point?
Other than I'm really proud of all the people in Representative Huffman's district for getting it done.
Thank
Couldn't
you.
Couldn't have done Thank it you. Without you,
Thank you. At this time, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3335, and this is relating to university degree programs. We have Representative Greenlick and Senator Dembro, and as they move forward, Doug, is there any background that you want to share with us?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, other than I'm sure the two legislators will be more detailed than I am, but basically this bill directs HEC to work with public universities to develop solutions for students who complete two or more years in coursework but then leave the university without graduating without any degree or official recognition. So it does have a fiscal impact of a little less than $60,000 to HEC for part of a position.
Thank you. And Representative Greenlick,
first come, first served. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, which is northwest Portland, out into Washington County. I'm very happy to be here today. I really appreciate your hearing 3335. The problem is very simple. If a student enrolls in a community college, successfully completes a two-year program, they get an Associate of Arts degree. They may go on to university to get a bachelor's or a PhD or something later, but they come away with that Associate Arts degree. If that same student enrolled at Portland State, did the same classes for 2 years, went on another year, and then dropped out of college for financial or other kinds of reasons, they would have no recognition of what they did in that 2 years. They would, rather than be successful, they'd be a college dropout, and in some sense viewed as a failure. When they went to work, went to apply for a job, they'd have no recognition that they had successfully completed an undergraduate course of work. So this proposal simply asks the HEC to working with the universities to find a way to commemorate that achievement of a student who enrolls, successfully completes 2 years of undergraduate work, does not get a bachelor's degree, but to find some recognition for that. This is really important for students to bring a credential to their employment, but it's also important in the context for our 40-40-20 model, because right now that student will show up in that model only as a high school graduate, when in fact they have really earned much more than that in any real sense. So It's very simple. It doesn't prescribe the answer. It's just asked the heck to find a way to solve this problem.
Thank you. Well, Representative Greenlick, we don't do this very often, but in our role as educators, in your role of education, both you and Senator Dembro have a long background. Could you share with our viewing public and the people here, what did you used to do before you were a legislator?
Well, for a long part of my career, I was vice president of research for Kaiser Permanente. But during that period, for almost 40 years, I was a regular part-time faculty member at Portland State and taught a class a term for about 30 years at Portland State. And during that time, I was also a professor at the Oregon Health Sciences University. And for the last 10 years of my academic career, I chaired the Department of Public Health and Preventive Medicine at Oregon Health Sciences University. So I've been around this problem. And perhaps more importantly than all that experience is I've had three kids who did or did not successfully complete a bachelor's degree in their career, and several grandkids also struggling with that same problem, including one of those who very successfully, in a very difficult circumstance, finished 3 years of undergraduate college and came an undergraduate at Portland State and came away without any certificate, any certification. So I've seen it both on an academic basis and I've seen it as a personal basis when that person overcame enormous obstacles to succeed in 3 years at the university and essentially came away with no recognition for it.
Thank you, Representative. Really appreciate it. Senator Dembro, also, as you recognize your position in your district, share a little bit about your background and then why are you supporting this bill?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Comp. I'm Michael Dembro. I'm the state senator for District 23. That's northeast and southeast Portland and the lovely city within a city of Maywood Park that's tucked in between. And I've also, for the last 34 years, taught at Portland Community College and was community college faculty representative on the State Board of Education, chaired the House Higher Education Committee for several years. And what brings me to this issue is both my experience as a teacher, but also my experience chairing the Higher Ed Committee. Back in 2011, some of you will remember, we passed what came to be known as the Transfer Student Bill of Rights and Responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And as part of that, we had an element that was called reverse transfer, where community college students who started the community college transferred to the university without getting their associate's degree because they were really focused on that bachelor's degree, and so they didn't think they needed an associate's degree. And in a couple of years, they would have their bachelor's degree, so why did they need an associate's degree? And then life happened, and that 2 years became 3 years, became 4 years, and they found themselves with nothing. And so we created this program, which encouraged partnerships between colleges and universities, where the credits that the student earned at the university could be wrapped back to the college to put together an associate's degree. And that has been, it's been going on now for a few years to, you know, some considerable success where it's happening. And we are seeing more students getting credentials as a result. Something that really is becoming more and more obvious over the years is the importance of students having credentials. Employers want it. Students need it for their own sense of satisfaction and, you know, that they have actually accomplished something. And it also, you know, frankly, helps to recognize the state's investment, which they've made in those students for the time they've been in the community college and the university. And, you know, in thinking about that program, I started thinking about the, you know, those students who started at the university who might find themselves in a similar situation, the kind of students that Representative Greenlich has mentioned. We actually came to this, you know, completely independently, well, in his case, great mind, in my case, another kind of mind, we're thinking alike.
A little outside help.
And so so this is what we bring to you, is to allow universities, you know, I was initially thinking, and I actually had a bill drafted that would ask the HEC to look specifically into whether or not universities should be granting associate's degrees to students who are in that situation. Some states do that. But the more we talked about it, you know, it made sense to go the route of the House bill, which was more wide open because, you know, who knows what's the right solution here? Is it a partnership between the college and the university? Is it, you know, giving universities the authority to grant associate's degrees? Whatever. But, you know, the idea of this bill is to give the HEC, you know, the direction of bringing smart people together to come up with a solution to this problem. So that, in a nutshell, is the bill. I think it will be good for Oregon students, and it will be good for, as Representative Greenlich said, our moving towards the 40-40-20. So with that, be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. And we might have a few. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony. As I look at this, my first, I think, easy question is, we are only talking about universities here, not talking about community colleges. So as I look at this, I love bills that are one page. This is even a half-page bill. As I look at this,
mine is longer.
Of course.
Yes, we understand why.
So, focusing back on this language here, as I look at this, probably the first concern that came to my mind, and so tell me if it's a valid concern or not, is as I look at this, successfully complete two or more years of coursework. So, are we talking about students that can dabble here, dabble here, dabble here, dabble here, and so we could have them coming out with some kind of piece of paper that is a mile wide and an inch deep, which really doesn't create qualifications probably for anything specific. Talk to me a little bit about that and what kind of definition would be built into this beyond the words in the bill.
Well, I think the issue is that ask the HEC to deal with exactly those kind of problems. We talked about a successful completion of a two-year course of study, and I've always viewed this as being your undergraduate requirements, but it would seem to me that's something that the HEC ought to ask and working with the university people bring back in very specific context.
You know, if I could follow up, the you know, for under reverse transfer, students can, you know, get the associate's degree retroactively if they've met the qualifications for that degree, either the Associate of Arts Oregon Transfer degree or the Associate of Science Oregon Transfer degree. And I would assume that the HEC would come up with something similar where, it's not just that they have achieve so many credits and they get a certificate of completion of some sort. It would really have to be, I think, you know, courses in that meet the distribution requirements for the degree.
Follow-up, Representative Springer.
Another question. Thank you, Madam Chair. So thinking back to when I was in college in my early 20s, right after high school, and I got really tired. And I got really tired of it. And I wanted to be done. And the goal seemed quite a ways out there. Too far out there, frankly, for me at that point. What about the student, and most of them at some point find themselves in that position, we have this easier point to get to. And I would be concerned that we would see students saying, you know what, that is too far out there. I'm going for this one here. And I'll go back later and finish. Talk to me a little bit about that concern.
Well, my impression is, I think it was something the senator said, life happens. More and more students are really having problems, having financial problems. The cost burden's quite extraordinary. We're, as you know, underfunding the Oregon Opportunity Act so that 25% of students who are qualified get it. There are people who just aren't able to finish now. Yes, there are some people who say, and I was very much in that same situation at the second semester of my sophomore year, getting 2 hours of C, 4 hours of D, and 9 hours of withdrawal, and wondering what the hell I was doing there. I persisted because I couldn't think of any other way, and I might have to go to work if I hadn't. But I think it's just being hard to students. Now, would this, my understanding of your question is, would this stimulate people to quit college when they might have stayed on? Yes, it might, but it might also give somebody who's forced to leave for one reason or another some opportunity to salvage something from that experience. You never had any trouble in your career.
Thank you.
My first year to second year was a challenge, but I did, yes, I did persist. But, you know, I think the students that you described, Rep. Springer, I think many of them are just dropping out entirely, right? And that, I think, is, you know, that's the problem that we're trying to solve here. I mean, I think if, you know, when things come up and students leave, they're going to leave. I think that you're not going to, if students who are focused on a bachelor's, you know, if they can get there, they will get there. You know, I don't think that students will, you know, be in their third year and decide, no, I'm going to change this. I don't see that as a real danger. It may happen with a few students, but I think the benefits of this really outweigh that risk.
It might also keep them in when they have that first to second year transition problem, when they might figure if they stay another year, they can get the associate or whatever the certificate is. Mm-hmm. It might keep them there another year.
That's a good point.
Any other comments from the committee? Senator Roblin?
Yeah, I think we had a good hearing in our Senate committee on this idea. And I feel very strongly that people who have gone through and done that should have some way of recognizing it. I was one of those people who had an associate arts degree. I was happy that I had it. It worked out well for me. I was planning always to get a degree. A number of friends didn't finish their associates. They went on at the same time I did to the university. The university still took me 4 years because marriage happens, kids happen, a lot of other things. But my wife and I, were determined I was going to get through this. Having the associates didn't stop me. So I don't think having this available will stop anybody who really wants to get that through. But life could have. I mean, we could have easily. I got a good job working with a bricklayer. It paid well. I would have had a nice profession had I decided not to go back. Didn't do that because this, in my head, was this other goal. So I don't think it will stop any of the associate's degree alone did not stop me from pursuing. I think the idea of allowing a more educated group of people in our society to have a way of showing that they did that will be a benefit to our 40-40-20 goal. It'll be a benefit to those individuals who put the time and effort in. And I believe it was the right thing to do to have HEC have the conversation and decide what it looked like, as opposed to saying it will be an associate's degree and they have to do these other things. I think this is the way, and I agree with you, short bills are good if they give direction in the right place. And I think this is part of why we have HEC, is to have these conversations and come up with the best answer to what we will offer these students who have completed a course of work, decided by them as to what kinds of things you happen. And it may actually spur people, once they come up with that, it may spur people to take that extra math class or to take that other thing, because they've said, if you don't have this, you aren't going to have the transfer degree. And at the sometime in the future, when they decide to go back to school, maybe as late as their 30s or 40s. They have a piece of paper and a transcript that says they completed this course of work, which I make it easier to get back into the system, in my belief. So I was pleased with the bill. Thanks that it came to us.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I really like that this bill, at least for me, causes me to think differently about what education looks like. And I think that's always a good thing. So I'm thinking, okay, so 2 years and you have this piece of paper that represents X, and it's called X, whatever that is. And so I'm thinking, okay, what is the value then of that piece of paper? Is it I've done something for 2 years and this symbolizes my accomplishment? Is this for a career path? What is that for? And so as I think about that, I think, well, if it's for me, then it's for me, and it's a good thing. If it's for somebody else, are they going to hold the same value in this piece of paper, this X, this thing? Are they going to hold the same value in it as I do? Are they going to be accustomed to valuing that? And how do you see that unfolding?
I think that's a very good question, Rep. Springer, and it's a much larger discussion, actually. I'm going to have to go back over to my other subcommittee, but I would love to spend a lot of time talking about the challenge of giving the associate's degree its proper recognition, because I think it really does have value. I know as a community college teacher myself, looking at students, who they are when they first come in, and who they are when they complete their program or transfer to a university, they are they have learned a great deal. They have acquired a lot of skills in that 2-year period that I think would really add value for an employer. But the story of the associate's degree, I think, is not really told to the extent that it should be here in Oregon. It is to a larger extent in some other states, but it has more value, I think. And, again, I think that's a large discussion for us to have.
Well, the lifetime earnings of people that have an associate
right.
degree compared to people that only have a high school degree is very significantly
yes,
different.
That's right.
I don't remember what that number is, but it's a big jump. And then another big jump with the bachelor's degree. So it has financial mm-hmm. value, I think, to the student as well.
And Representative, if
you.
We could have one last question.
You bet. So maybe I've missed the point here. So we're talking about creating associate degrees at the university
no.
level?
No, that might be an answer, but we're asking HEC to come up with an answer.
Okay.
And it might be a certificate of completion. It might be something.
Yeah. It should be something of value, I think. That will be the challenge. And the question is it issued by the university? Is it issued by a partner community college? I think that really needs to be worked out.
Okay. Thank both of you. I appreciate this. And it's amazing how two minds can do the same thing in different places and different times. That's what makes the legislature fun. Huh. Well, fun for some of us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, committee.
Thank you. And we, so that people that have signed up to testify, we only have one presenter on more on this bill. So I think I'll take that presenter, and then we'll move back to House Bill 3380. So Richard Schwartz.
Madam Chair, I said a little outside help, and he's the person who brought me the idea.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Co-Chair Monroe. My name is Richard Schwartz, and I'm here to ask for your support of the House Bill 335A and ask the committee to give it a favorable recommendation. I will try to answer some of the questions that came up with a little bit more detail, if you'll find that helpful. I have submitted brief written testimony. I won't read it to you, but just for way of background, I'm the retired executive director of AFT Oregon, and during that span, I also served on the Post-Secondary Quality Education Commission, which, as you know, is the spawned the 40-20 which later became enshrined in the statutes. One of the issues, or some of the issues, many of them still stick with me, and occasionally my mind wanders and visits them. And one of them was that persisted was the issue of 4-year degree completion, which at the outset of the commission was deeply discussed in great detail about the need for greater degree completion and development of more graduates from the 4-year institutions as a long-term goal for the state of Oregon. The University System Fact Book reports for the most recent data that I had available was within a 6-year time frame, only 55.7 or just shy of 56% for entering freshmen continued through their original school of enrollment to a degree. That was slightly higher at just under 70% for students transferring into the university. So there's still a large gap in either case between those who enroll and those who graduate and complete the 4-year degree. And that gap, as you heard, is commonly looked at as a failure. And that notion stuck with me as to why is there a failure? Because as those of you and in my experience went to a university, I'm sorry that a fellow alumna, Representative Taylor, is not here. I went to the University of Wisconsin at Madison, the same as she did. There are basic degree requirements in every university and college. Those are the courses in the humanities and social studies, math and science. They may vary slightly from one institution to another, but that are required for whatever degree you're going to achieve, Bachelor of Science, Bachelor of Arts, and it is those course requirements that are necessary and lay the foundation for the advanced courses. When I originally raised this idea with Representative Greenlich, who was gracious as my own representative to give me an audience on the subject, the idea that was rattling around in my head was, well, look, if you complete these basic degree requirements, you've essentially completed the same coursework that you would have completed in this state in a community college. And it's not that that is the objective to complete those 2 years, but in the course of doing the coursework, you will have passed through that level of achievement. And then, as you heard, life happens, and there are a variety of reasons why students drop out or don't re-enroll to continue their education and abandon their 4-year degree objective. Could be family commitments, could be just the rigors of the university life, it could be in the course of study they're in, it could be family commitments, it could just be loss of resources in order to be able to complete. But rather than on employment applications of just checking some college, if there is some way of recognizing that I achieved successfully a level of study at the university, that the higher ed system could find a way of conferring some kind of recognition, a credential, a certificate that says, that acknowledges that fact. This idea is different from reverse transfer, which is not uniformly applied in the state. It is not the same as granting a degree. It isn't, the idea was not to create an associate's degree. It was not to compete with the grading or course requirements or systems that are in place in the university or to influence any of that, but merely that if somebody was going to drop out, that they could and had successfully completed at whatever later point that was the basic degree requirements, that they could request and receive some recognition, certificate or some other form, as I mentioned. That's the original idea. Reverse transfer doesn't answer that question, and that wouldn't be disturbed anyway. Reverse transfer was really developed under a 2-year grant pilot program that involved about a dozen different states, and in Oregon was one of them. And the requirements vary, as you heard Senator Dembro mention. The reverse transfer is a student who had started in a community college and then moves to a university could move credits back to the community college for completing an associate's degree along the way. However, it's possible that some of the credits they might want to move back don't meet the same requirements for that community college, and they would have to re-enroll there and pay the course fees in order to get credit for that program. Getting into the program varies. Some require 30 credits, some require only 24 credits to be moved in. So with that aside, this idea doesn't compete with any of the systems that are in place now. It only asks HEC to say, hey, look, you have students that are dropping out. One of our objectives in the state is to recognize accomplishment. Those students, rather than being considered a failure, who have successfully completed and because they're dropping out, ask for that recognition certificate or whatever it might be called, should be able to get one. In my role as an executive director, also I was an employer, and I hired employees. I looked and read at many, many resumes, and so I saw the varying levels of education accomplishment that those applicants had achieved. This would have been something else I could have read in that and would have given me an understanding of what it was that they did with their education system, and it would have been an opportunity to inquire further and evaluate more thoroughly the applicant, rather than just having some statement that, oh, I went there, but asks the question, what's the outcome?
Yeah, and Mr. Schwartz, if you'd wrap it up, we've got a number of other people to yet testify today.
Thank you. I am finished and available to any questions you might have.
Okay, and we do have your letter in front of us, and so that, and you're probably open. I'm going to make the assumption, and I don't like that word, but that members can contact you by calling you if they have questions or
sure, anytime.
Okay. Well, I thank you and appreciate you drove down from Portland this morning.
Yes, I did.
Good drive.
It was sunny.
Well, thank you so much, and working with Representative Greenlick on this bill.
Okay. Madam Chair, just quickly.
Yes, sir.
Thank you,
Representative Huffman. Quickly.
This really seems to make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And I guess probably the most disappointing thing for me in listening to the testimony, and I served with Senator Dembro on the Higher Ed Committee for a number of years, and I guess the disappointing thing for me is, why didn't higher ed, the university system, whatever, come to us with this idea a long, long time ago? Not to sound too critical, but I'm just curious why. Because this seems like common sense, low-hanging fruit. But then again, I'm not a university guy, so I don't know.
Well.
And Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
And the answer is, that's why we need a HEC, to combine higher ed so that community colleges and universities can talk to each other and work out programs that make sense for both of them. This is such a program, so.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3335, and we're going to continue with the presentations, people that wanted to speak on House Bill 3380. And I have two panels, committee, so that you know if you want to ask questions and that sort of thing. And I don't know if we have Julie, if we have additional people that have signed up, but we're going to start with Donna, I believe it's Schnitzer, and John Reeves. And we welcome you this morning and thank you for your patience and
knowledge,
whatever you're going to bring to me. And I can't predict what all these great members are going to ask you.
That's all right.
Okay.
Co-Chair Comps and Moreau, members of the committee, thank you so much for letting us testify this morning. I'm Donna Schnitker, and I am the president of the Oregon Head Start Association. I'm also a Head Start director in Harney County. So I'm coming in support of House Bill 3380 because it really encapsulates an idea that Head Start has had for a long time, that we want to make sure that all children in Oregon, 3 to 4 years old, have access to quality preschool. whether it is Head Start or others. And we had a plan many, many years ago of how we could make that work. But we want to make sure that the children who live in poverty have access to preschool, too, because they don't have any other options out there. So I wanted to bring you some statistics that we've pulled together, and that is Head Start, Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Head Start, which is a combination. The numbers I'm giving you is a combination of Oregon dollars and federal dollars. So we are serving 55% of the eligible children. So that translates to 12,257 children. There are 44.7% children that do not have access but are still eligible for Head Start services. That translates to 9,893 children who do not have access currently. The waiting list for Head Start programs is 2,600. Now, there's a discrepancy there because at some point, families just don't apply because they know they're not going to get in. So, but we know for sure that programs in Oregon, 2,600 children, are eligible and are not receiving the services. So we are here today in support of this bill because we want to ensure that children who live in poverty, all children can access those services. And with this bill, the base budget of Head Start would get one-third of the allocation of dollars. So, of course, we are supporting the $30 million that has been proposed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Co-chairs Comp and Monroe and members of the committee, thank you for your time. My name is John Reeves. I'm a local director here for Community Action Head Start in Marion and Polk counties, and we did have the esteemed privilege of having the governor come by to our Wilbur Head Start that she mentioned in her comments earlier, and Megan Irwin with the Early Learning Division. So it was a great day for us a couple days ago with their visit. Community Action Head Start has been operating here in our two counties since 1967. And we've grown to serve about 810 children in our pre-K program, ages 3 to 5, and 156 children birth to 3. And those are the comprehensive Head Start services for children and families. And within that, we are serving the highest risk, highest needs families in our communities, 120 children experiencing special needs and disabilities, and 62 children this year experiencing homelessness. And that number has been up to about 100 on different years. And so very, very high needs families. Currently, our wait list is 170 children, and with our Salem-Kaiser partners, they also have 110 children on their waiting list, 280 in this area. And those are all families that are eligible and under the 100% federal poverty guidelines. And so that's concerning, and obviously we're very interested in seeing this expansion opportunity and the opportunity for the mixed delivery preschool opportunities. And we've been collecting data this year for the families that have applied for our Head Start program that were not eligible for Head Start, that fell between the 100 and 200% of poverty level, and this is without any marketing at all. We had an additional 285 families that were of need that could have utilized the services if it was expanded into this mixed delivery model. And so the funding that you're considering to allocate to these opportunities are going to be critical to meet our waiting list needs and reduce that very significantly, in addition to creating new opportunities for families that are also in poverty but not as extreme as the folks that are in our Head Start programs. And I just wanted to mention, with our Early Learning Hub system, I think this opportunity is really going to exercise their ability to add some depth to the system that they're putting together to really allow them to coordinate and create tangible opportunities to address the priority areas in our communities with this money, and coordinating the all of the individuals that are really interested in participating in the mixed delivery system. And so I just want to thank you. I'll mention I'm a board member on our Early Learning Hub in Marion and Polk counties. And I just want to thank you for your time and deep and thoughtful consideration of what you're doing now and the decisions you're making on behalf of children and families in our communities.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and thank you both for being here. I'm not sure if this is for you so much or it may end up. I apologize that I didn't ask to Megan.
Oh, that's all right.
As far as implementing this, are we looking on a timeline? I mean, are we going to be able to do this increase for next fall if we get this through? Is that how, or maybe it's a question for Doug?
Yeah. Mr. Wilson, can
Madam
you
Chair,
give us
a- Representative Smith Warner. I think the plan is that some of the money would be used directly for Head Start in the first year of the biennium, and then that sort of channel to the preschool mixed delivery system would come in the second year, giving the department a chance to sort of formulate the details of it.
Okay, great. And thank you for that. And that partially goes to my next question, which is in that mixed delivery system, I just want to, that's helpful to hear because one of my concerns is that I want this to go, I think, and we all do want this to go to the highest need kids, as opposed to subsidizing preschool for, you know, I just try to keep that idea out of my head of, are we going to be subsidizing, you know, child care centers with other, you know, with these new attendees. And I know that that is not the point, but to me, that's my why I like the Head Start part so much, is it's so clearly it's established that way. It's that long serving, you guys know your targets and we know we're going to get it right to those constituencies who really need it. So
thank you.
I'm not sure there's a question in there. Sorry. Oh. I guess there's not. It was in the beginning.
Well, I think that to all of our input to our co-chairs and presiding officers, I think this committee can get the message across pretty well. So thank you, Representative. Any other comments for this panel? Thank you for coming this morning. Thank you for your patience, and thank you for all your wonderful work with children.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You cannot be replaced very easily. Okay, we have Dana Hepper. Is it Nadia Perez?
Nydia.
And Krista Dennis? Dana, coordinate however you want to.
I will. Chair Comp and Chair Monroe, thank you so much.
And as an experienced teacher.
Right, exactly. Good with seating charts. Members of the committee, my name is Dana Hepper. I'm the Director of Policy and Program at the Children's Institute. Josette is with us today as well. She's not going to testify, but she's going to help us translate for Nydia.
Oh, thank you.
Who will be much more comfortable testifying in Spanish. So thanks for that. Low-income children without access to preschool can fall behind before they've even started kindergarten.
Yep.
And so the goal of expanding access to preschool is to close the gap before it starts. And, well, obviously our families living 0 to 100% federal poverty level are in deep need. Actually, when you look at families that are living between 100 and 200% federal poverty level, are still in incredibly deep need, or are still in a position where it's very challenging to afford tuition at a high quality preschool, and they have zero access. We're seeing firsthand at Earl Boyles Elementary School how an integrated preschool with that mix of income range. Now, everyone pretty much going to preschool and going to elementary school at Earl Boyles Elementary is low income. The vast majority are. And very few had access
yes,
to preschool.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
That would be in the David Douglas School District.
In Senator Monroe's beautiful district.
Yes, and you don't have a lighthouse, but you have a great school.
Exactly.
They took one of our South Coast schools to be their superintendent.
Just a quick anecdote. One child entered the preschool at 3 years old, nonverbal, and entered kindergarten with no IEP, no special education services needed. So we're seeing that at the personal level, and then community-wide, we're seeing basically kindergarten readiness scores and end-of-kindergarten benchmark scores that are going through the roof. It's really raising the bar in kindergarten just at the moment that we're implementing Common Core. And yet we have 32,000 low-income kids without access to preschool in Oregon. The legislation, House Bill 3380, as you know, came unanimously out of the House Education Policy Committee. So I think we've done a lot of the groundwork needed on the legislation to really make it move. So I think the most important thing this committee can do is help us figure out how to get to that $30 million number. A third of that those dollars we're advocating would go to reduce the Head Start wait lists. Two-thirds would go to launch this mixed delivery preschool approach, and that would serve 1,500 kids each year on average, 3,000 kids over the course of the biennium. And with that, I'll turn it over to Krista and Nydia to talk about how they see preschool making a difference for the kids they know and love.
Thanks so much, Dana.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Nydia Perez, and I have four children. Y solo tres de ellos han tenido la oportunidad de cursar el GESTA.
She's had three of her children that have been able to be in part of Head Start or of preschool.
And la mayoría de mi vida he vivido en California, y ellos lo cursaron allá el Early Head Start.
The majority of her time she's always lived in California, and her kids were attending Head Start in California.
Tengo dos años viviendo en Oregon, y cuando llegamos aquí, Adán no tuvo la oportunidad de cursar un año aquí el Head Start.
She's been here for 2 years, and one of her kids has just barely gotten the opportunity to have Head Start. He's only had 1 year of Head Start.
Y David sí tiene la oportunidad ahorita de cursar el GESTA y sabe escribir su nombre, le gusta mucho leer.
Her youngest son was able to go to school here, do preschool, and he's able to write his name and read.
Es muy importante para mí porque ha ayudado mucho a mis niños a ser independientes.
It's helped, she's really proud of having preschool for her kids because it's helped her kids to be very independent.
Y como cursaron el GESTAR, el Early GESTAR desde chiquitos, Adán, ahora que salió del kinder, ya sabe leer.
That she's glad that she's been able to have Head Start in her life for the simple fact that her kindergarten son, who is going to be a first grader, is able to read now on his own.
Estoy aquí para pedirle su ayuda.
She's here to be able to ask for the help.
Porque para mí la educación de los niños es muy importante.
For the education of the kids is very important.
Y el Early Head Start y el GESTAR les ayuda mucho para el kinder.
Early Head Start and Head Start is very important for her and kids to be able to learn and to go forward.
Los hace más positivos porque mi niña que no cursó el GESTAR me cuesta un poco que ella crea en ella.
She said that since it helps her with all her other kids, and her daughter was not able to do Head Start. And she tries to be able to be supportive for her daughter, and it just takes a lot more time to be able to help her daughter when her, you know, but the other kids, they've had that opportunity. She
wants to ask you for more money for preschool.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
She also has books to prove the different things that the kids have learned.
David is famous in the California. Aún reparte en este flyer para promover el Head Start.
Her son is on one of the flyers for California to promote Head Start.
Does she want to introduce her children? We would love to hear hear their names.
This is David. This is the flyer.
Okay, this is David, the one that's in the flyer.
Does he want to be a college professor?
firefighter,
that's great.
Of course.
And this is a firefighter too.
Uh-huh.
And
he wants to be a scientist.
Oh, uh-huh. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you
so much. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
Okay.
Krista.
Hello.
That's a hard act to follow.
I know. That's okay. I'm used to it. I'm usually pushing them out in front of me. So So my name is Krista Dennis, and I am the proud mother of the little blonde child in the back that is really quiet. He's back there working on his math. So he was in the preschool 2 years ago. He just finished first grade. He was diagnosed at 3 with autism, high functioning. He was nonverbal at 3, went to 1 year of private preschool, and then he got into the Earl Boyles program in the first year. He did amazingly with all of his peers. He learned all of his letter sounds, all of his shapes, all of his numbers. He learned to cope so well that it just sparked his learning. He went into kindergarten, qualified for TAG in 2 different out of the 3 areas in TAG, the only kindergartner in the school that qualified for TAG, the only one they actually sent to test at all for TAG. So going into first grade, he ended up finishing first grade math within a couple of months. They ended up giving him the second grade homework at the same time the second graders were, and he was completing it at the same time without being in the class. So it's amazing for me to see my child go from not speaking at all at 3 to doing these amazing science and calculations that I'm having to tutor fourth grade just to keep up with him. But another part of it is that I spent almost every day in the preschool, the kindergarten, and his first grade class, helping him out, but also helping his classmates out. So I could see the kids that weren't in the preschool, in kindergarten, how far behind they were in just ready to learn and how far not knowing the numbers, and seeing the same classmates, because in his school they try to keep the same kids together going up. So I saw the kindergartner, and then they've slipped back because they didn't get into that rhythm of learning over the summer, and they would slip farther behind over the summer, come into first grade, and they were still struggling to learn and to follow instructions. And a lot of kids that had behavior problems and that weren't able to complete their work were the kids that didn't have preschool. Yep. And it was amazing to me to just watch how they weren't ready to learn and how they didn't know their numbers coming into kindergarten. And seeing the preschool kids just thrive and push forward, and it was amazing to me. And the parents starting in, with their kids in preschool, they're fighting to get their kids into the preschool program. Not every preschool program can be awesome like Earl Boyles, but we're pretty cool. Because we stole a good superintendent, but that's all right. We'll keep him.
That's right.
But, you know, the parents were calling their other parents when their children weren't there and finding out, is the child sick or are you sick? Do we need to come get your child and we'll bring your child to school? Oh. It was parents helping parents and creating that unity to help the children that started in preschool and carries on. And we have an amazing parent group, and it's mostly started by parents who were in the preschool. We're 50 strong within the first year. Wow. Of our parent group, and it's one of the largest ones in our district, and mostly in Spanish, so it's mostly lower-income families, and it's just creating this community to help our children.
Great. Thanks, Krista. Questions of these really all-star parents?
Oh, and because he asked the other ones, he currently wants to be an animator for Disney or an illustrator for Marvel.
He can't lose.
Yeah. And it's all on computers, and that's why he likes it.
Okay. Thank you, Krista.
Thank you.
That's our last person that signed up to testify today. Is there anyone else here in the audience that would like to speak on either House Bill 3380 or Senate Bill 213? Okay, if not, I'm going to close the public hearing on both of those. And Mr. Wilson, we love you, and we can't live without you. And I know you're working.
Speaking for herself, of course, Doug.
Well, let's put it this way. If this man wasn't here working as hard as he is, we would never finish this session.
Oh, I know.
Madam Chair, schedule-wise, there are 3 bills scheduled for Monday, Senate Bill 78, House Bill 2871, and House Bill 2955. Those will be on Monday, and I believe they're all going to be public hearings. And then tentatively scheduled on Tuesday to do the HEC budget, Wednesday on OEIB, and hopefully Thursday the Department of Education. And there may be other bills scattered in there. I know 860, I think, will be scheduled on Wednesday for a work session. And when we get the go-ahead to do other work sessions, we'll slide them in into that schedule, too.
Okay.
But both Department of Ed and HEC will take a while to walk through because they're both pretty large agencies, with mostly HEC with lots of subunits.
Okay. And yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
Isn't 3335 ready to go, too? It's a testimony and work session.
Madam Chair, Senator Monroe, I wanted to make sure the co-chairs knew about the fiscal on it to make sure that HEC isn't getting a lot of stuff piled on them, which is happening this session without adding staff to sort of do some of these studies. And there's some concern about that.
Okay.
And appreciation to all the members of this committee. The governor shared with me before we started, she said, well, you guys have a reputation starting late. And she says, but you're all here.
How did she hear that?
I don't know. You know this building, all the walls have ears. And Senator Thompson, you were here on time.
I got three phone calls this morning. One, they woke me up at 6.
Next Your one, wife?
No, the committee.
Oh,
the next
good.
One was at 8 o'clock to make sure I was out of the hotel. And the next one was at 8:25 to make sure I'd show up. So. Committee did great work.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the order? Members, we finished on time. We are adjourned.
I'd like to know who called at 6. I'm sorry. I'd like to know who called at 6. I'm sorry.